61 million sockeye. The total run to Bristol Bay has shot right past the preseason forecast of 51 million fish. Now, we're in record territory. Just how close is it to the largest run to Bristol Bay ever? Stay tuned. I'm your host, Avery Lill, on this final Bristol Bay Fisheries Report of 2018. Coming up on tonight's show, we'll hear from Alaska Department of Fish and Game Management biologists about what stood out to them in this year's wild season. Paul Salamone helps us unravel the mystery of Igigik missing 2-2 age class and why Eastside fish aren't always caught in the districts they're born.
Igigik's under forecast because of the missing 2-2s. Ugashik's over forecast by a little bit, and I'm kind of waiting to see what the genetics give us to find out in both those districts which fish actually belong there and which fish belong somewhere else.
Bristol Bay's impressive returns stand out in a year where other regions are struggling. Statewide, though, we're seeing some of the smallest sized fish on record across species. A regional supervisor from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game puts that in context for us.
Smaller fish are less valuable if you look at the fillet market. And in a processing plant, you can handle so many fish per day, and once you reach that capacity, you're pretty much topped out.
That and more on tonight's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report.
Support for KDLG comes from Nomar in Homer, Alaska, working year-round to make gear for Alaska fishermen and offering brailer and slush bags for the fishing season. Information at nomaralaska.com or 1-800-478-8364.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. Ensuring long-term growth is the world's greatest salmon fishery through investment in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we're on board with you.
Now, let's take a look at the numbers in our daily run summary from Thursday. Total run to Bristol Bay as of yesterday reached just over 61 million. That makes 2018's Bristol Bay's second largest run ever, just edging out 1995. It's now just a half million sockeye behind the record 61.7 million fish set in 1980. If you recall, the preseason forecast was 51.3 million, which we passed last week. Thursday's total catch across the five districts was 487,000 sockeye. Looking at the individual districts, let's go to Igigik first. Igigik's catch on Thursday was 44,000, pushing cumulative harvest to 4.9 million fish. No escapement was counted for the Igigik River yesterday. Total escapement there is at 1.6 million reds. Add those up, and the total run to Igigik District so far is 6.5 million, still quite a way below its preseason forecast run of 9.1 million. Turning to the Naknek-Quejack now, it has the strongest catches all week. Catch for Thursday was 283,000 for a cumulative harvest of 8.45 million. It's pushing close to the forecast preseason harvest of 8.9 million. It looks like Fish and Game has stopped tracking daily escapements for the Naknek-Quejack River systems, but cumulative escapement added up to 8.2 million. That includes 1.6 million from the Alagnak River, 4.4 million in the Quejack River, and 2.2 million in the Naknek River. Naknek-Quejack's total run just met its preseason forecast of 16.6 million yesterday. Ugashik also had a good week. Yesterday, fishermen caught 72,000 fish. Season total catch is now 2.7 million. At the Ugashik Tower yesterday, the crew counted escapement of 8,652 reds. Season cumulative escapement for the Ugashik River is 1.2 million. That brings Ugashik's total run so far to 3.8 million, almost a full million fish above its preseason forecast run of 2.9 million. Even with yesterday's total closure of the Nushagak district because of leaking fuel from that sunken tender, fishermen managed to catch 58,000 fish before 1 o'clock. The season total red catch for the Nushagak is a record-breaking 23,954,000. Looking at the Nushagak's escapement, on Thursday, 5,862 sockeye passed the Portage Creek sonar, bringing the season total to 1.1 million. The Wood River Counting Tower crew has picked up camp at Aleknagik, but cumulative escapement there nearly doubled 2017's record. It ended up at 7.5 million. The Igushik Tower reported a cumulative escapement of 728,200. All rivers combined, Nushagak escapement has racked up 9.38 million fish up its three rivers. Total run to the noosh is now 33,329,000, well ahead of 2018's prediction of 21.8 million. Out west, Togiak has made steady progress all week long with extended fishing through the weekend. Togiak caught 30,000 reds on Thursday. Season cumulative has doubled since last Friday to sit at 451,000. Out at the Togiak Tower, they saw 22,200 reds yesterday. That put season total escapement for Togiak at 261,700. Once again, this weekend, area management biologist Tim Sands has extended fishing in Togiak for an additional 48 hours through 9 a.m. Sunday. The regular weekly schedule then kicks in on Monday. Total run to Togiak so far is 713,000 out of its preseason forecast of 860,000. Let's step back to take in the whole bay now. As I mentioned, total harvest bay-wide on Thursday was 487,000 sockeye. That puts our season total harvest so far at 40,443,000 fish. Fish and Game records show this is only the third time ever that Bristol Bay's harvest has topped that 40 million mark. The bay will likely push over 1993's 40.5 million today, putting it closer to the record harvest at 44.3 million set in 1995. Escapement at the towers, still counting, totaled 36,700 on Thursday. That pushes Bristol Bay's total escapement to 20.6 million so far this summer. 2018's total run has now reached 61 million, making it the second largest run in Bristol Bay. Changing gears now, let's take a look at your latest numbers on sockeye per drift boat delivery across the bay on Thursday. Ugashik had 564 reds per delivery. Igigik delivered an average of 896. Naknek-Queejack had 745 fish per delivery. Nooshigak averaged 431. And Togiak, 303. The Department of Fish and Game stops tracking vessel registration on July 17th, so we don't have any details on how many boats remain out in the districts for you. That's your daily run summary. Based on tallies of Thursday's catch and escapement, this is the Bristol Bay's Fishery Report on KDLG. Back in a moment.
Support for KDLG is made possible by generous support from the Bristol Bay Fishermen's Association, advocating for fishermen. Online at bristolbayfishermen.org. Support for the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report comes from Deep Sea Fisheries Incorporated, working to provide top-quality Alaskan seafood with a commitment to sustainable sourcing. Serving Bristol Bay salmon fishermen with the Big Creek Fisheries Shore Plant since 2008. More at deepseafisheries.com.
Before we get into the wrap-up part of our show, we've been following some breaking news in the Nooshigak District. Salvage efforts are underway for the tender that sank near Clark's Point on Wednesday. What caused the 58-foot fishing vessel Pacific Knight to capsize is still under investigation. Divers were on scene to assess the situation yesterday and today. According to the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, when the vessel sank, it had 1,100 gallons of diesel and hydraulic fuel on board. Some of that fuel spilled, but how much spilled is still unknown. Out of concern that fuel on the water could contaminate fish and fishing gear, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game closed the Nooshigak District to commercial salmon fishing yesterday. This afternoon at 1 o'clock, the Agushik section only of the district reopened to set and drift gillnet gear. Area management biologist Tim Sands flew aerial surveys yesterday and today to monitor the situation.
We flew and saw less fuel coming off the vessel, and it was dispersing quicker.
That gave him confidence that the Agushik section of the district is not at risk of contamination from fuel. Sands said that he'll be monitoring the rest of the district to see when it will be safe to reopen it to commercial fishing.
It's a day-by-day situation. We're going to fly it again tomorrow, hopefully, and kind of keep communicating with the other entities involved. They're hoping that they'll be able to plug all the vents on the vessel today. And if that's the case, then there's a much better chance we'll be able to open things up. We might still keep an area around that area closed, but we kind of make it up as we go along.
Fish and Game is also cautioning subsistence fishing on Dillingham beaches that there is a chance fuel could float that far from the wreckage.
People should just be aware that there's a possibility, and if they go down there and they smell fuel, you know, keep an eye on things. Is all we're trying to let people know. We're not saying don't fish. We're not saying that the fish are contaminated, because clearly the fish are under the water and they're fine until you catch them in your net, and then they have to come through the surface. That's where the contamination potentially would be. You know, if you can wait a couple days, you don't have to get your subsistence fish this weekend, and maybe wait a couple days if you really want to go out and get it fish this weekend. If you can go to the Wood River, you're maybe better off, or the Lower Nooshogak. If you have to go to Kanaknak, well, just, you know, pay attention.
The owner of the fishing vessel Pacific Knight, a Petersburg-based company called Lone Fisherman Incorporated, is contracting with Resolve Marine to salvage the boat. In a situation report, DEC said that the fuel in the water may place more than a dozen species of birds and marine wildlife at risk, including several listed on the Endangered Species Act. One person who was on board the Pacific Knight when it went down is still missing, 59-year-old John Phillips of Juneau. Now we turn to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologists who manage Bristol Bay's five commercial fishing districts. We've been talking with them on the show all summer. We called them up one more time to get their perspectives as fishing draws to a close. We begin with Travis Ellison on the Naknek Kwejak. So the Naknek Kwejak just hit its preseason forecast. What a roller coaster season. How does it look to you now that we're getting down to the end?
Yeah, like you said, it's amazing it's hit forecast, especially the way things were looking towards what would historically be the middle of the run. I think as we talked about last time, it is definitely the latest run on history. We had a peak of July 14th for the Naknek Kwejak District, and historically the peak is July 5th. So overall, this run is at 9 days late, and if we can catch another 500,000 fish, we'll end up at 10 days late. So it's pretty amazing. The harvest from the last 3 days, July 24th to July 26th, were all daily harvest records for the district. So it's just, the lateness is something we haven't seen to this extreme anyways. So pretty neat.
And what does it mean for you from a management perspective when the run comes in so late?
Oh, it certainly complicates the management problem of trying to track run curves to meet escapement goals and make the decisions of, you know, when to provide opportunity to harvest fish and when to focus on getting escapement. You know, this year we end up in the Naknek River Special Harvest Area for about a week. And at the time, it certainly was the right decision. But now looking back hindsight, it's kind of amazing that this thing's come in on forecast when, you know, when we were in river, we were looking at, you know, maybe seeing a total run of less than 10 million. And here we might break 17 million now the way things are still going here at the end of July.
And from that Monday morning quarterback perspective, is there anything looking back now that you wish might have been done differently?
No, I think we made the right decisions when they needed to be made. I'm glad to see a lot of people are still out participating, and still most of the major companies are still buying fish. And you know, seeing these late daily harvest records this late in the run is pretty awesome. Most years, a lot of people would have packed up and gone home by now, but people are paying attention to how the fish runs are coming in and taking advantage of it.
And how is participation looking at this point, and how does that participation tailing off at the end of the season impact your management?
Well, we've, provided continuous fishing through, it'll be open through a week from today, so through August 3rd on Friday. And I think that's helped to keep people involved without going through the weekend closures. Been able to keep people working without going on these extended breaks of waiting throughout the whole weekend for it to open again. I think that's helped keep keep interest. We'll see what happens this coming week. It's hard to predict since we're so far out of the range of anything we've seen before. But, you know, I expect it to really start tailing off this week. And, you know, by the end of this next week, I can't imagine there will be a whole lot of major effort out there.
And is there anything else that stands out to you as remarkable this season, other than just the lateness of the run? Is there anything else that you're going to be looking at in the fall, trying to figure out what happened in terms of genetics or anything like that?
Not really. I mean, obviously the Nooshkak return to the Nooshkak district is incredibly remarkable. So everybody's fortunate that was over there and participated in that. You know, we broke 60 million for Bristol Bay total run. I don't think we've seen that since 1995. And, you know, this is our fourth very large run in a row. So, you know, things are looking good for Bristol Bay right now.
Well, thank you so much for all of the conversations you've had with us over the season. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for the help, Avery.
Until just a couple of weeks back, Igigik and Ugashik fishermen were scratching their heads, wondering where the fish were. In the second half of July, harvest in both districts surged so that Ugashik ended up ahead of forecast and Igigik trails significantly behind. Area management biologist Paul Salmon says east side fish tend to get caught outside their native districts, and that means we can't get finalized run data until those genetic tests are finished this fall. KDLG's Austin Fast spoke with Salmon this afternoon to get a feel for how the districts intermingling and the late run will affect forecasts for next year.
I just took a look at the daily run summary. It seems like Igigik is still quite a ways behind that forecast. Ugashik surpassed its forecast by a million. Could you give us a sense of how this year went from your perspective as the area management biologist?
Well, that kind of sums it up right there. Igigik's under forecast because of the missing two twos. Ugashik's over forecast by a little bit, and I'm kind of waiting to see what the genetics give us to find out in both those districts which fish actually belong there and which fish belong somewhere else.
What do you mean belong somewhere else?
Well, we have a tendency to catch fish that are not local stocks in both those districts. Igigik catches everybody's fish on the east side, but in some years it's more of some stocks and less of others. And Ugashik has a tendency to exchange fish with Igigik. So while the numbers on paper look good for now, we won't know for sure how big the runs actually were until we get the genetics back from the catch data.
If they are caught in different districts, how does that affect what you're doing there? Does that matter that they're being caught in a different district, or what's the significance of that?
Well, part of our management plan is to minimize intercepted stocks that were caught in other districts. And you don't know in season necessarily when that happens. So in the postseason, one of the positive things about the genetics program is it gives us some idea by parsing out where the catch actually originated and helps us to determine how big a run for a given district actually was. We know that fish get caught in Igigik that belong in Anaknakwijak, and sometimes that belong in Ugashik. We also know that fish that get caught in the Ugashik sometimes belong in Igigik and sometimes belong in the Anaknakwijak. And when I say belong, I mean that's where they originated. And before we had the genetics tool available, we always used to think that whatever got caught in a district belonged there. So now we're able to analyze the fish and separate out the components that belong to Anaknakwijak that are caught in Igigik, and it gives us a truer idea of how big the run actually was, which in the long run helps us understand how much a given spawning event produced, and it helps us make our brood tables more accurate, which in theory leads us to better forecasting.
Right, and how long does that process take? Like, when will you actually have the finalized numbers for 2018?
We're hoping sometime into the early fall so we can use them to forecast next year's run.
And then based on those numbers from this year, do you anticipate any sort of changes or in management, or what do you expect going over into 2019? Do you have some sort of feeling for what 2019 will bring?
Well, our management is always based on the escapement. So if we're having escapement in a given system, we're fishing. If we don't have escapement, then we're not fishing. And it's really kind of, in a lot of respects, that oversimplifies things, but that's the basis of how we conduct the fisheries. And when you go fishing in a particular district or when a fishery occurs, you catch what's there. So that's part of the harvest that's in a district, but it may not necessarily be composed of 100% of the stock that originated in that river system or that district.
Do you have any other observations from your side of the bay that you feel are worth noting?
There were certainly some late components to both Igigik and Ugashik, but looking at the overall run pattern or run entry pattern, early parts of Igigik were right about where we expected them to be. What really kind of changed things was a very large late component. The run timing is going to look later, but it's because we had a very large chunk of the fish come in. One of the later pulses was very strong, so that'll make it kind of appear to be later. But everything else seemed to line up right where it should have been.
Very good, Paul. I thank you so much for taking the time, and good luck with the remainder of the season. It seems like it's really slowing down over there from what we're hearing.
Yeah, that's also about what we expect for right now.
Well, you take care. I'll talk to you later then.
All right, thanks, Austin.
The last manager that we'll hear from is Tim Sands, who managed the giant run to the Nooshigak District. When I talked to him this afternoon, we talked about how he would tell the story of this year's run. So we're coming down to the end of things. Obviously, we have the late-breaking news with the boat that's gone down. But overall, how do you tell the story of the Nooshigak this season?
Well, it was an amazing year. Came in much bigger than forecast. Some of us had inklings that it might be a little bit bigger. But still, spectacular as far as total number of fish. All the rivers seem, got their escapement and some, and a lot of fishing time. So in all that regard, I'm pretty pleased with how things worked out.
In terms of remarkable moments this season, I know at the beginning it seemed like the King run was coming in super hard and fast, and it still looks like it did pretty well. How are the Kings looking? We haven't talked about them in a while.
Kings were over 93,000. The in-river goal is 95,000. So really, considering how many boats we had in the district fishing, I'm very, very pleased with where we ended up with Kings.
And then records that we broke this year, can we just go through the list? How many records were broken and which ones?
Well, the escapement on the Wood River, the total run, the total harvest, the number of days of million harvests, the total single day harvests, single day escapement on the Wood River, number of boats in the district. I think, if you looked at the catch by certain areas like the Ecuck Beach, Coffee Point Beach, Combine, all record harvests, lots of fishing in the Wood River. We took more fish out of the Wood River with set nets than we've ever taken out of there before. So it was pretty exceptional.
And then going into the fall, is there anything that you're looking to the genetics to tell you, or what is on your mind as we get out of the fishing season?
Well, we definitely want to see what percentage of fish were Nooshigak fish versus Wood River fish versus Igooshik fish. That will help us build the brood tables and help for forecasting. We want to get a closer look at the age comp information. That will help with forecasting and just kind of replay things and see where we could have done things a little bit better or different, stuff like that.
And then before I let you go, is there anything else that you want to say about this season or about how managing it has been?
No, it's been really a whirlwind, more than most seasons, I think, because it stayed busy the whole time, and usually when we're fishing hard and everything else, it seems to get pretty quiet and never really got quiet. It's just been a really frenetic season.
Well, thank you so much for all of the conversations that you've had with us all season.
Hey, it's a pleasure, and you guys helped me out a lot, too, so thank you.
Now that we've heard what the biologists had to say about the season, let's turn to some of your perspectives on this year. And what a year it's been. For Erica De La Rosa, it was a busy season in the Nooshigak, but every year is busy in her opinion.
It's just a lot of work. It's just as much work to catch a little bit of fish as it is to catch a lot of fish.
After last year's huge run, plenty of boats headed straight to the Nooshigak to see if lightning would strike twice, and it did. At its peak, over 700 boats flooded the district, but there were plenty of fish to go around since, so far, over 33 million sockeye have pushed their way into the district. De La Rosa says she didn't realize how big the run was at first because there were so many people fishing in the Noosh.
It was very interesting going to the tenders and seeing all of the boats and knowing that's where the record-breaking numbers are going. They're just dispersed between the fleet.
A lot of fishermen who usually fish in east side districts found themselves in the Nooshogek this season, but for some, like Dave Newson, it didn't work out that well.
The district is real big, real huge, and real rough, and my boat's just not set up for that, and I got a little bit spooked and decided to transfer back to Igigik, which probably wasn't the right move.
The forecast by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game for the Igigik District was around 9 million red salmon returning, but this year's run has come in far under that prediction. Newson says he stayed in Igigik for a little bit chasing fish, but like many, he wasn't having a lot of luck. Then he transferred to the Ugashik District in the beginning of July. At first, that decision didn't look any more promising than the last few calls, but around the 13th, things dramatically changed. The fish hit, and in a little over a week, Newson had caught tens of thousands of pounds, which he described to KDLG's East Side reporter, Mitch Borden.
You pretty much did most of your season in 10 days.
Yeah, we basically did. We did all our season.
That's amazing.
Now, if you would have asked me that before the season started, I would have told you to go fly a kite. You're not right at all.
The 10-day push of sockeye on Ugashik Bay from July 13th to the 23rd was a boost for drift and set netters. Up until that point, a lot of people wondered if the run was even coming. But then the salmon arrived and things got busy quickly, says Katie Birch, a set netter from Pilot Point.
So, you know, it felt like a whole entire salmon season got squeezed into 10 days.
We never really had no big pop. It was just steady, steady, scratch, 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 scratch.
Daryl Pope switched from the Nooshogek to the Naknek-Quijack District right after the Naknek River Special Harvest District was called off. Pope says fishing was pretty steady after July 14th. He said he probably should have stayed out fishing a little longer, but it was just time to pull out around the 22nd. The Nooshogek tired out a lot of people this year just by how long the fish lasted. Trevor Grams says that this was his sixth season working as a deckhand, and it was pretty crazy.
First of all, we went to the Noosh for the first time ever, and we pretty much fished 24 hours a day, and it was like the whole season was the peak.
Graham says it's killing his skipper that there are still people out there fishing, but after the season they had, it was time to call it because the crew was running on empty.
Oh yeah, needed sleep. The fishing was slow, and everybody just had had enough. We were out of food, no more clean clothes, no more clean underwear. It's been a week and a half since the last shower.
He also made the point that the season varied a lot from boat to boat. Some did great, others couldn't find the fish. But that's normal, according to Stuart McTaggart, who is fishing in the Nooshogek.
You know, every season is different. Every season has its own characteristics. What is similar is the change and the difference between them and all of that. And it's always great to come on up here and see what Mother Nature throws at you.
Now, every season comes with its big fish stories. Dillingham's Allison O'Brien told KDLG's Austin Fast about a different kind of big catch. It altogether derailed her one morning last week.
My name's Allison. We are in the Nooshogek, Dillingham Harbor. I've been around. I feel like I should know more, but that's up to me, right? My deckhand and I were going out, and it's just me and her, and we've had some boat problems, so we've had a couple retorts, like, we're going out there now, and, like, people are like, well, you're crazy. I'm like, well, maybe, but we're still going to go out and fish. But our biggest problem was we caught a tree, and we handled it, but it was our biggest problem so far. Like, I was anticipating, like, wind, water, like, mechanical issues, but we caught a tree instead. Yeah, it was the length of our boat. We were just in a tide rip that was catching fish, so that's why I sat there. And then I noticed what I called the bird condos heading for our net, like crap. So we tried to tow away from it, tow toward it, like anything that tree wanted we were willing to do, but the tree was having its way, so it started to come aboard. When you hear your net web popping, then that's just like, that sounds like a hole in your purse, a hole in your man wallet. Sounds like you're just losing money already. And the tree, I don't think there's much good price for trees. So we needed that out. But it was a long, this thing is not going to bend. And it's waterlogged. And it's probably more stubborn than me because I'm not that old yet. I was thinking, well, maybe we could just take it with us and have steam wood. But we couldn't both get it on board. It would have taken, we would have to bring it up over the roller, which is like, okay, we're not lumberjacks. We're trying to be fishermen here. So let's just get this thing away from us. So we pulled it up halfway. We lassoed it. We yelled at it. We tied it off on the cleat so you can come with us forever. Just please stop screwing with our net. And then eventually we were trying to pull it in and we're like, well, I think we just have to do what the tree wants, which is to ebb out. So we had to just put it back in the water and then just carefully escort it around our bow, which it liked. We saw the problem coming and I anticipated the problem, but what I didn't anticipate was like sucking up 2 hours of our time. And then I thought the worst was over. Like, there's two people on a boat fishing. Like, we're not that crazy. We got over that hump.
The music in that piece was Rue de la Swing by John Allen and provided by Epidemic Sound.
Support for KDLG comes from Alaska Eagle Eye, locally owned and operated with car, truck, tool, equipment, and adventure gear rentals at the King Salmon Airport. Committed to getting you on your way in Bristol Bay. Reservations at 246-CARS.
We've said it before, it's certainly been a roller coaster of a year in Bristol Bay, but really, it's been an unusual year all over the state for sockeye. KDLG's Austin Fast takes a step back and reports on how our fish fit into the larger picture.
It's been a year for the Bristol Bay record books as total sockeye runs surpassed 61 million on Thursday, putting it just a half million fish behind 1980's largest run ever. Bert Lewis oversees commercial fisheries in Bristol Bay, Cook Inlet, and Prince William Sound for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He's impressed at the Nooshkak run's strength and even at the bay's east side districts, which he says came in late but solidly.
That stands out really statewide, where sockeye runs have not been strong. I know that westward Kodiak area is meeting their goals, but with very little fishing opportunity. Cook Inlet right now is under restrictions. We look at other species. King salmon statewide are of concern with low returns, but meeting goals solidly in Bristol Bay.
King salmon escapement was strong enough that 100 anglers filled the Nooshkak River this June for a new King Derby, even as poor returns canceled a handful of derbies in southeast Alaska. Lewis says the prevailing theory for Bristol Bay's bounty is the blob, an unusually warm water mass that filled the northern Gulf of Alaska as this year's returning fish migrated out to sea a few years back.
We know that it tends to disrupt food webs that support the forage base that the juveniles salmon feed on, and the fact that we see that pretty consistently across southeast and the north gulf, and yet Bristol Bay, we're not seeing that. Well, the warm blob, this warm water anomaly, was not present in the Bering Sea where those fish came out. So that's one possible supporting piece of evidence that we're looking to, that it was the 2015 outmigration year that could be driving some of the patterns we're seeing in good returns in Bristol Bay, poorer, weak returns across much of the rest of the state.
Anecdotally, fishermen have been telling us all summer their red salmon seems smaller than in years past, but Lewis confirms it. In fact, he says the issue cuts across species statewide with some of the smallest sizes on record. He blames the marine environment.
That suggests marine productivity at some level is behind it, and whether it's global climate change or just natural alterations through time of how the Pacific Ocean currents are structured. We believe that's what largely is driving this.
Besides affecting fishermen's wallets, those smaller fish returning to Alaska's river systems directly impact processors' bottom lines, Lewis says.
A processing plant can handle so many fish per day, and once you reach that capacity, you're pretty much topped out. The head and gutting machines and the fillet machines were built on 6-pound average fish, and now we've got 5-pound average fish. And ecologically, each female that comes back is going to have less eggs, so their overall reproductive potential could be declining. And what are the ecological implications of that is unknown.
What Lewis can say with certainty is that strong returns and increasing prices over the last 5 years are raising the value of Bristol Bay salmon. He says this year's ex-vessel value is among the top 5 in Bristol Bay's history since they began keeping records around the turn of the century. He busts out a calculator to punch in the fish harvest so far, 40 million, times the average sockeye weight of 5.5 pounds, times the average price of $1.25. That puts this season at $275 million with the fish still trickling in. In the end, Lewis attributes Bristol Bay's success story to strong collaboration among ADF&G, organizations like the BBEDC and BBSRI, and the fishermen themselves.
We're all in lockstep together, and we've received a tremendous amount of support from the industry and fishing fleet.
For KDLG in Dillingham, I'm Austin Fast.
And now we've got a lot of messages to all sorts of folks involved in the fishery. A shout out from Teresa, Rola Bola, to Big Dwayne and Ekuk. You are the wind beneath my wings. To the captain of the fishing vessel, Bucko, from your sister, when we may have told you to break a leg, but we didn't mean it literally, I hope that you are as comfortable as possible in the container and things are running smoothly with your crew. Just think about Ziggy and the string and our sister that plays tennis and wishing you a speedy recovery. Wishing I could be there to help out. Love, your sister that doesn't play tennis. That comes with a song request for Alice's Restaurant with the addendum that if it's too much or too long for people to suffer through, could you just mention it? Not only are we mentioning it, but we are going to play it after the show. Anyone who listening who doesn't like it knows whose sister to blame. Really though, it's a great song. Kate at the Togiak Tower is requesting the song Highwayman by the band Highwayman. Dito at Togiak Tower also says, thanks so much for playing my songs. Could y'all play Dwight Yoakam, Take Hold of My Hand for Perry Lee? Thanks again, y'all are the best. Of course we can, it's been fun playing them, and tonight we have a treat for you, Dito. Perry Lee sent in us an email. Hi, can I request a song for Dito at the Togiak Tower from Perry Lee? Come Away With Me by Nora Jones. Also tell Kate at the Togiak Tower that I can't wait to kick it with her again, and I'll see both of them real soon. To Mick in Bethel, listening online, Jordan misses you and says you should come over for moose soup. He have moose soup and everything. And Jordan is requesting a Grateful Dead song be added to the playlist. We've also got a message to Epiphany Eller from her parents. It's got bullet points. 1. Doug modified and renamed an old poem, so here it goes. This is what he wrote / modified. To Epiphany, with apologies to John Masefield. This is adapted from John Masefield's Sea Fever. Bristol Bay. I must go down to the bay again, to the lonely sea and sky. And all I ask is a skipper true and a star to steer me by. And the waves kick and the winds strong and the boat sides shaking. And a gray mist on the sea's face and gray dawn breaking. I must go down to the bay again. For the call of the running red is a wild call and a clear call that breaks into my head. And all I ask is a windy day with the white cloud flying and the far from spray and the blown spume and the seagulls crying. I must go down to the bay again, to the salmon picker's life, to the cannery's way and the whale's way where the wind's like a whetted knife. And all I ask is a merry yarn from a fellow woman rover and a quiet sleep and new lands when the long trek's over. 2. From Mom or Connie. Song to play if there's time. Chuck Berry's Johnny Be Good. I'm dedicating the song to Epiphany, who at the age of 16 a decade ago, should I be telling her age on the air, surprised us. Not only did she know and care who Chuck Berry was, we were happy that she did, but unbeknownst to us, all that time she owned a treasured 45 RPM record of his, and she got his autograph, and took a photo with him. This tells you how specially fearless, brave, creative, and talented Epiphany is, but you already knew that because Epiphany is a Bristol Bay Fisher woman. 3. To all the men and women of the Alaska Bristol Bay fishing environment, you have my respect, love, and I'll keep praying for you. Connie Eller in St. Louis, Missouri. Finally, Bruce Lutzik from Aleknagik is requesting the song Final Countdown, and we want to thank him for the pictures he's contributed to our web posts throughout the summer. Last week's riddle was a nice quick one. It appeared first in the magazine Popular Mechanics. I'll reread it first. In a room, there are 53 bicycles. There is also a table in the middle of the room. A dead man with a bullet hole in his head is slouched in a chair face down on the table. What happened? It's a simple answer. A group of people were having a poker game and one of the players was cheating with an extra card, an ace up his sleeve. He got caught and shot in the head. There are 53 bicycles in the room. Bicycles is the playing card brand. Well, folks, that's going to do it for the 2018 Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. Thanks for sticking with us through our special coverage of this great fishery. It's an honor to report on the industry and on your hard work, whether you're the one picking the net or a part of this broad community near and far that supports the fishing effort. Thank you to every guest who spoke with us on this show, and thank you to our fish reporters, Mitch Borden and Nacknick and Austin Fast and Dillingham for their hard work all summer. This show is done for the summer, but our reporting continues. You can find it online at kdlg.org or listen to our regular newscasts at 7, 8:15 in the morning, noon, and 4:30 in the afternoon. Here's wishing you a good end to your summer. I'm your host, Avery Lill. Meet us back here in 2019 for another summer, the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. To close out our show, we've got a treat that Mitch Borden recorded in the Pilot Point Airport yesterday, a song written by one of your own Bristol Bay fishermen.
Hey, I'm Jason, and I'm here in Ugashik at the Pilot Point Airport. I'm just going to sing a little song I've been working on the past couple days. We catching salmon, salmon, I'm catching salmon with you. We catching salmon, salmon, and I hope you like the salmon too. Every year the salmon spawn, and we wake up before dawn to catch the salmon all day through. The tenders give us a good price if the fish are bled and iced, so it can go be bought and sold. If the fishes do not jump, then we go and move God's clumps. If you're lucky, they don't smell like poo. The last verse, I haven't figured, it's this rough draft. If I hear more one more word about Nooshigak, then I think I'm going to crack. We will sell them if you buy them. We sell them if you buy them. And one more. When the drifters get too close with their big expensive boats, they can go and quirk themselves too. That's it. That's what I got so far. It's Bob Marley. It's jamming. I'm working on it.
Support for KDLG comes from Commercial Fishermen for Bristol Bay. Fishermen working together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region. Please join us in standing for salmon. Text JUMPER to 907-268-4905 to get involved and be entered in to win a $200 Alaska Airlines or a $200 LFS gift card. Or visit our website at fishermenforbristolbay.org. Brought to you by Commercial Fishermen of Bristol Bay.